Welcome to a new episode of BFRR, Bitcoin, Fiat, and Rock'n'Roll, the podcast that explores the intersection of traditional finance, digital assets, and digital money and helps you understand how digital money and digital assets will actually evolve in the years ahead. I'm co-host Michael Blaschke, and today I'm joined by Stefan, our appreciated guest host, and by our guest Ivica Aracic, CTO at Sviat. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello. Nice to be here again.
Hello, everybody.
So, Ivica, you are the chief technology officer at Sviat in Frankfurt, a computer scientist by training right out of TU Darmstadt, and someone who spends his time at the point where technology, governance, and economics collide in digital finance. You write a lot about blockchain and distributed systems. I always consume your content on LinkedIn, and I really appreciate it. And what I appreciate most is that your whole approach is about demystifying the hype and finding the balanced, practical version of what actually works out there. So this is a strength CTOs usually have, making stuff work, right? So now you're deep in the effort to bring together the tech, the business, and the legal pieces needed to let the financial industry finally and really scale digital asset use cases. Yeah, and you're committed builder on Ethereum. So Ivica, are you happy with that introduction? Is there anything you would add?
That is a perfect summary, especially being at the intersection. Yeah. So because the whole thing is not only like packaging a little bit of technology and throwing over the fence and then everything flies. So you need to connect a lot of pieces together, especially from legal and from business and from technology in order to bring something to, let's say, a scaled state. Yeah. Thank you for this introduction. Yeah.
So to everyone, the reason we wanted Ivica on this week specifically, RL1 or Regulated Layer 1 is going live by the end of July. This is a big moment for the European institutional DLT story, in my opinion. We're talking about a market-neutral cooperative Layer 1 network structured as a European cooperative in Luxembourg that's already carrying real volume. So we are north of 700 million euros settled, 50 plus participants, live use cases from digital bonds to repo. It's built on the Sviat infrastructure that Ivica's technology team really runs. And why does this matter now? Why are we talking about this today? Because Europe has been talking about tokenization and shared infrastructure for years now. And this is one of the first times we can point to something that is actually productive rather than a white paper. It also lands right in the middle of the Eurosystem's own push, that is Pontes and Appia, and of course, against the global backdrop where everyone from BlackRock to JP Morgan is moving from pilots to production. So I think the timing is really interesting, and there's plenty to be skeptical about too, which we'll get to soon enough. Yeah. So we structure the episode around why, what, how. So we start with why Europe needs this at all, kind of the problem. We then move to what regulated one actually is. And then we get into the how, the governance, the cash lag, and whether this survives contact with reality once you're live, right? So Ivica, you've been saying for a while now that DLT in finance doesn't have a technology problem, it has an organizational problem. RL1 goes live very soon, so let's start there. What do you actually mean by that, by an organizational problem? And does RL1 solve the organizational problem, or is it still fundamentally a technology play you're looking for adoption?
Mm-hmm. That's a good starting point to start with. With the organizational problem, and what I mean with that is the following. I mean, when we talk about blockchain technology, then kind of everybody is saying, okay, if we could meet in one single place, so to say, or a few single places, so to say, then everything would get easier, and then you can connect stakeholders end to end, and you can integrate and then connect all the assets together, and then create services as orchestrations of, let's say, different steps that are currently taking place in different systems. But then the question is how to organize this common place, yeah? Because such a commodity still needs organization, yeah? And they are like, so far there have been like two extremes, yeah? So the one extreme is to say, It is public permissionless. And if you look, for instance, at Ethereum mainnet, you can see what you can reach if you have a, let's say, a common place which is open, neutral, and operated as utility, and you do not install like gates where everybody's like checking what's getting in, and this is a good or bad innovation. Yeah? And then you see like this is a huge innovation jungle, but it was suffering all the time, especially in the talking from the perspective of financial industry. Here, this space has been suffering from what we call like compliance optimization. And compliance optimization is in a sense of, if I'm a large institution and I move large portions of my business and I make myself dependent on a platform, then I need to be able to answer the question, who's responsible for what? Yeah. And I also need to be clear about, let's say, single aspects of this infrastructure. So it's not sufficient to say like it is operating already for 10 years and there were no flows and no let's say breakdowns, so it will operate for the next 100 years. So this is not enough. I need to kind of go aspect by aspect and kind of provide a risk assessment and kind of be clear on what I'm making myself dependent on and what my measures are if some of these, let's say, components break. Yeah, so that's one thing. And the second extreme is what we know as private permissioned networks or consortial chains, like they have been operated so far. And they tried like to solve the compliance optimization problem, but they were like strangling innovation, neutrality, and openness. And in many cases, also, they were not operated as utility, which costs what it just needs to cost, but it was kind of created as some sort of revenue extraction platforms of this area, which of course breaks the main idea of the platform. If there is an owner and this owner is profiting of this platform, and then when it grows, then it tries to press out as many money out of it or value out of it as possible, then it breaks. And often also it was designed in a way that it was a conglomerate consisting out of the platform itself, but also the use cases. Everything was tangled with each other. If I look at, previous consortial blockchains that have been created, and I also have to admit, I also participated eagerly 2017 in creating such consortia. And what we're now trying to do with regulated layer one is like to bring these four properties into, let's say, a sweet spot between completely open, but completely compliance optimized, but strangling innovation and installing too many gateways. And we're trying to find a sweet spot between this to create a platform which is neutral and open, at least from the perspective of the financial industry itself, and also to create a platform which is designed as and operated as utility in a sense of that it is operated for the benefit of all its participants and not for revenue extraction, and also to be compliance optimized in a sense of I'm making myself dependent on this infrastructure and I'm able to answer the question who's responsible for what and what risk is associated with which component. That's the main driver behind a regulated layer one, to strike the balance between these two extremes, public permissionless and private permissioned. So far for a quick overview on regulated layer one.
Yeah, we're still talking about the why Europe needs regulated layer one. And if I understand you correctly, your argument is the tension between compliance and innovation needs to be mitigated or balanced, right? So in the information systems literature, this is often referred to the control change paradox, and that on the one hand, for emerging technologies to succeed, control is required, controlled by the issuers, and control in that sense is compliance. Like, you need to control the emergence of the technology to be compliant. On the other hand, you want change, you want innovation, and this is almost paradoxical. So it's a tension. And if I understand it correctly, you have at least the ambition to smartly balance out this tension, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if you're designing architecture for no matter what, yeah, you always have like a multiple set of, let's say, configuration parameters or parameters in general. And not all of them are kind of independent that you can maximize all of them. And often you need to do some sort of a trade-off. Right. And of course, control and compliance optimization and knowing who's responsible for what, of course, it kind of involves, let's say, a thin layer of permissioning at the minimum, right? And this thin layer of permissioning, of course, can be, if you do not do it right, contrary to openness, neutrality, and allowing also for innovation to thrive on such a platform, yeah? And that's exactly like I said. So we are trying to balance this out. And we're also trying not to do too much. We are saying, if you look at the IMF asset model, like platform layer, asset layer, service layer, and access layer, right? So we're saying, let's try only to solve organizational problem at the platform layer. So the naked blockchain, so to say, the pure technical platform, so to say, without assets and services. And let's design it in a way that we have enough permissioning to be able to answer, let's say, some compliance questions, who's responsible for what, especially. But let's not try to play some sort of, let's say, smart contract police or use case police and say, this use case is good and this use case is not good. Yeah. And if you're coming in, you need to buy in use cases that we have invested in, then everything breaks. That's how consortial blockchains worked before. And we're just kind of playing, or not we, but the regulated layer one corporation. We're playing the gateway for who can join and participate in the platform, but it is not playing the gateway for which use cases are allowed or not. So it is open for regulated entities. And if you're a regulated entity, then you're grown up, you're adult, right? you know what you do. And there is no further control on which use case is allowed and what use case not. So that's how we try to kind of balance it out.
Ivica, I need to ask one question. So maybe 4 years ago, I would have agreed to your balancing between permissioned and permissionless and optimizing for compliance. But what we saw in the last 2 years is that many, many players launched their own corporate chain, usually somewhat related to the Ethereum ecosystem. The biggest news the last 2 weeks was Robinhood Chain. Out of nothing, they became one of the top five chains now in the world. And we have several different examples like Stripe going for that, Circle. So the stablecoin issuers going that route, the exchanges like Kraken launching their own ink chain, or Binance already has BNB chain, and others are thinking about that, obviously. So say they optimize in an even different way. So the 2026 take of your balancing, did you think about the corporate chains and how to respond to them?
Absolutely. And what I think is, they're kind of repeating the same phase, so to say, that consortial chains did. But it does not look that at the first glance, because they themselves have a lot of volume that they can put on their own corporate chain. But the problem is, if they try to kind of grow beyond their, let's say, influence domain, so to say, then there is a wall. They cannot break this wall, because the blockchain works best if, let's say, even competing entities can coexist on the same platform. And I do not believe that, for instance, these guys that created these blockchains now, they can coexist on the same platform, yeah, because everybody would be kind of waving and saying, you come to my platform and my franchise stays with me. And then it cannot grow beyond that. And what we are trying to create is something where the whole financial industry, or let's say European financial industry, that's our focus. We try to kind of focus on Europe first, because Europe has enough homework kind of to do first before it kind of expands beyond that. We are trying to create a platform where even competitors can cooperate on this platform layer for the benefit of all, and also be organized in a cooperative structure, because a cooperative structure, European cooperative legal entity structure, is perfectly well kind of suited to manage shared goods, so to say, or shared utilities or commodities, so to say. And then still they have enough room to compete on top of it at a service and asset layer. That's the idea. And that's also the reason why we radically kind of, if you look at the IMF model again, ASAP, we radically draw the line between a platform and asset, service, and access layer. And we said, okay, the lower part is not contributing to competitive differentiation. Please look towards a public permissionless Ethereum. What is possible if you have a, such a, let's say, shared utility? And let's now organize this in a way that we have a similar shared utility, hopefully kind of preserving all these positive properties that public permissionless settings have, but in a way that the verge is lowered for regulated entities to make themselves dependent on large scale to such a platform. And that's the goal behind it.
Ivica, am I understanding you correctly, since you're talking about this ASAP framework in which platform is on the lowest level, that your key claim is that RL1 stays at the platform layer only? It doesn't compete with its members on services or assets or access. So kind of neutrality means staying in your lane, and RL1 will stay in lane on the platform level.
Absolutely. That's exactly the case. And if you look at corporate chains, they try to cover everything end to end. And then you can kind of imagine border is that it cannot cross, if you like, at the platform. Yeah. Yeah, because their competitors will be doing the same, right?
But at the same time, if you compare yourself to the generic Ethereum for institutional use cases, let's put it like that, then you also see the problems of Ethereum, these corporate chains are not only optimizing for their own assets, but for their use cases. So if you look at Stripe and Tempo, they optimize heavily for payments. They want to introduce additional standards to that the transactions can transport some meta information about what are you buying, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there is a tendency that specialization is going on there in the innovation space. So innovation goes where you can also specialize. I totally agree to you that this is at least an early mover advantage that we see. So most of these platforms draw a lot of attention in the beginning. We need to see where this ends 1 or 2 years later. We've seen a lot of booms and bust cycles in the crypto space. But what makes you confident that you are specific enough for your institutional clients in the cooperative that you become significant, at least at first, and win over these more specialized players?
So first of all, I absolutely agree that depending on the use cases that you want to cover, that then you might eventually need, let's say, different, let's say, technological constellations or configurations that you need to cover. But what we have recognized is that organizational problem, especially if you want to manage a commodity or utility, always is the same. And if you have solved this, let's say, for one technological configuration, you can easily reuse it also for different setups. Yeah. So we are not saying that, let's say, this Ethereum-based network under the regulated layer one governance is eventually kind of the silver bullet that will be solving all the problems for the next X years. But we needed something to start with. And as I said in the beginning, so it's not only technology, we also need to solve organizational problem. And we are very confident that this organizational problem, once solved, how to manage shared goods or utilities, that you can kind of expand at the technology layer and kind of be flexible in which other users needed to be covered. There are no plans for that. But for instance, if, let's say, for scaling purpose, it would be necessary to introduce layer twos, there is no blocker to do that. It could be done. If there is a need, for instance, to introduce in parallel, a Solana-based network, yeah, because it is coming with some, advantages for some specific use cases, it could be also run in parallel under the same governance. And also the same validator set could also ensure interoperability without having to go to someone like Layer 0 or Chainlink. Yeah? My message is organizational problems are universal. So if you read books about innovation or project management from the 70s, they still apply to that what we do today. If you read technology books from the 70s, then you can trash them. Yeah, because so technology is changing much, much faster than actually organizational and social structures. And we are trying really to solve the social and the organizational aspects here. That's our main unique selling point.
Yeah. So just to remember all of us, we're still talking about the why regulated layer one for Europe. What I'm hearing is that number one, you're seeking to solve this organizational problem of balancing out or mitigating the tensions of compliance and innovation for at least for your members, you're promising or guaranteeing neutrality of staying in your lane on the platform level. And I would also assume you offer as a platform some technical differentiators like you're permissioned, you're EVM compatible, you offer a consensus mechanism with total finality. That is, there will not be any forks. And it's also promising, if that can really be promised, then you guarantee that no cryptocurrencies are transacted on your platform, if I understood it correctly, stable gas pricing, all participants KYC'd, validators are ISO 27001 certified, and you offer a business continuity plan. So is this, in summary, kind of nailing the why of regulated layer one?
So this is rather like how, yeah. So, but why? I mean, you're trying now to kind of answer why for a couple of times, so now I'm really trying to answer it. So I mean, the main why is because I mean everyone is kind of recognizing that if we can bring assets and services, so to say, into shared distributed ledger, and also connect stakeholders end to end, then efficiencies. Efficiency gains come, then also I open opportunities for new, let's say, business, because through these speed ups I have eventually another possibilities, and I think we are pushing now since 10 years in financial industry towards DLT, and everybody is kind of intuitively understanding all these benefits, but we did not come to the place where we have the shared ledger actually in financial industry. And of course, there is public permissionless, but do you see MiFID instruments on Mars there? Yeah, do you see like regulated business on Mars there? I do not see it. Yeah, and for this reason, we said, okay, what is actually hindering regulated entities to move the business on scale? And then we came to this aspect of, let's say, compliance optimization, and all these properties that you had named, they are contributing to it. Yeah, so it's like. A feature list, so rather at a how level, and it is lowering the verge to kind of based on habits and processes that we have to easier enter as regulated entity, but then on the other side, without breaking the main promises of the blockchain technology, having neutrality, having the openness, co-opetition, in the sense of cooperation on the platform level. Yeah, so that's the main reason. Yeah, we need a common place where these assets and services can meet, a common crystallization point. And so far, we did not have one, and we have identified this compliance optimization aspect that it is missing, in addition to neutrality, utility, and openness. And that's the trade-off constellation that we are putting into place now. And looking at the member list, and also it is a pan-European initiative, yeah. We see a lot of interest, so to say, in joining this platform. And when we talk to regulated entities, we last time we got the comment like, this is for the first time that I see all my problems solved from the perspective of the platform level. Yeah, and it is kind of in Germany would say hitting the right nerve, yeah, so to say, and covering, solving the real pain points. Yeah.
Brilliant. So I think we've now understood really the problem and at least from the CTO's perspective, understanding why regulated layer one is needed. How about we now move from the very problem to the proposed solution details, or to the what? So Ivica, you use this phrase quite often, that is a crystallization point, if I read your material correctly, a crystallization point for Europe's digital financial market. So a single place where tokenized assets, commercial bank money, and wholesale central bank money, so different forms of digital money essentially, can actually meet and interact. So please walk us through why that convergence point is the missing piece, and why it can't just emerge organically from bilateral connections in the market between existing systems.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so first of all, the problem or the challenge that we have in Europe is fragmentation. I mean, we have a lot of flavors and a lot of, let's say, selfishness, so at national level, yeah, for different things. I do not have concrete numbers, but we have too many exchanges, too many security depositories, too many of the same thing, so to say, in different flavors. And now, of course, we have Savings and Investments Union, which is exactly kind of trying to push against this fragmentation, to consolidate and to make Europe kind of better placed at the global level from the competitiveness perspective. And of course, blockchain technology is something which can help with that. Yeah, because it can connect like competing entities. It can bring them all to the same platform. Yeah, and if all relevant players are at the same platform, or let's say a set of consolidated platforms at least, yeah, not necessarily one single blockchain, so to say, then it is also much easier for services to connect and also for standards to emerge, yeah, out of this. For this reason, blockchain is actually a gift, yeah, from European perspective, because it pretty well matches to our decentralized political structure that we have in Europe. Yeah, so this decentralized political structure and blockchain matches pretty well with decentralized operations and cooperation at the platform level, at the basic foundational level, and then still there is enough room to compete on top of it. Yeah, and so for this reason, it is a gift. Yeah, and the existing systems are designed in the way how I just described. Yeah, because it is fragmented and nobody is kind of willing kind of to consolidate at that level. But blockchain technology can help to consolidate if people maintain their sovereignty by moving on blockchain and do not have to fear of kind of losing control or sovereignty over their service and assets.
Ivica, let me push on the word fragmentation a bit. So everyone, including me as an architect, uses it a lot. Let's get us concrete. So fragmented across what? Fragmented across institutions or networks or initiatives or regulatory tracks. What does that fragmentation actually cost the industry in practice?
Yeah, I mean, if as I said in the beginning, if you look at Europe, yeah, alone for central security depositories, who is kind of managing the records of who owns which securities, it is pretty fragmented. So I think everybody agrees if we could kind of agree on having one single entity being responsible for this, like we have it in US, then of course there would be more efficiencies, because you do not need entities as an overlay on top of it kind of to coordinate or to manage transfers between, let's say, these different systems. Yeah. And the next best that we can reach is with blockchain, if we say, okay, let's at least kind of make these services available on a common shared platform. You still can kind of run your books and you still can run your books, but at least we are, let's say, in a same data process model, like a technical guy would say, and we can do interoperability and integration between these two easier. And moreover, for instance, if you look at Savings and Investments Union, there's a lot of capital in European Union, but the mobility of it is very limited as soon as it goes cross-border. Yeah. For instance, let's say French investors, of course, they can invest in German projects or German companies and so on, but there is still kind of a border, yeah, and the mobility is not given. And having a shared platform would not automatically solve this, but it would kind of foster to make it easier, yeah. So, and also to create, let's say, common standards. Yeah.
Sorry, one question on that, because you I think you strive for convergence, which would mean that, and I agree to that goal, yeah, that you have different asset classes and different forms of digital money available on the same ledger. But then at the same time, you have contradictory moves that you see. Okay, a wholesale CBDC might not be run on Sviad or regulated layer one, but they might use their own infrastructure. You have the big clearing houses in Europe, like Clearstream or Deutsche Börse, pushing for their D7 platform. Don't see that they launch their tokenized securities on your platform. I would say that any bank announced that they run their tokenized deposit scheme on Sviad or regulated layer one. So how do you solve these problems then with such a platform? What should be their incentives, especially for the big ones that are powerful? Why should they join your platform?
Because of neutrality and openness, and because of sovereignty over their service and assets. So they can bring the asset on a shared platform without having to be in fear losing control or sovereignty over the asset. And so that's the main thing. And Stefan, I totally agree. It will not instantly happen, you know, that everybody is kind of coming just because it's kind of a shared platform. But it is, I mean, we are since... I guess a decade in this business, yeah, and you know how kind of slow this evolution is. And what we are trying now with regulated layer one, it is also educational thing, like to explain also the people and also to give at the same time a solution that a platform itself, it can only kind of profit from these benefits as blockchain only if you consider this as shared utility. If you consider this as competitive differentiation for your use case or your service, then it breaks down. This promise completely breaks down. As long as this educational cycle did not kind of come to an end, we will still have this fragmentation, and people will be asking themselves, oh my God, so where are all of these benefits when they are coming? And I hope that people are going to realize this, that it can only happen if we have a shared utility that we can meet on, and then also still be able to compete to each other on top of it. And if you,
I totally agree to your, Ivica, I totally agree to your goals. But what I see as a reality is now that everybody's watching Amazon and all these players who are virtually integrating as deep as possible. Look at Apple. Look at all these giants. And so why should I ask myself, even if I would hope for a different future, but why should European giants that have a mode, that have kind of a monopolistic situation currently, they wouldn't easily give up on that. They would rather see these huge US players as a shining example, how to really make even more money. So that's why I'm a bit skeptical. I totally agree that the second and third and fourth and fifth and all these more pluralistic players, they should be easily or be on-ramped on such a platform. But I'm still a bit skeptical how to convince the primary players that might lose actually a bit of traction once joining your platform, at least at first sight.
I mean, if we are talking about giants, so let's pick European Central Bank as an example and wholesale CBDC. If you look at the Apia roadmap paper that has been published, They are starting to change in their thinking. I think it will be a long process, like taking 2 to 3 years. But I'm very patient. So I mean, I'm here since 10 years, and I can also be patient for the next 10 years and move step by step. But if you read this paper,
just very briefly on Apia, for those who don't know, it's a more ambitious undertaking in the euro system. So a ground up effort to design a tokenized wholesale financial ecosystem with a blueprint due in the second half of 2028 only. Just for those who haven't heard about Apia, right?
Exactly. Thank you for giving background info on this. I mean, Pontes and Apia. So Pontes is like the short-term solution where they say, okay, central bank money is sitting in central bank systems, but we're providing you an interface, and you can connect to market DLTs and execute like delivery versus payment with central bank money. And Apia is much more ambitious. So where they're saying, okay, we want to bring eventually central bank money in tokenized form, make it a kind of easy to integrate with other assets. And we there is also an item in Apia roadmap where they're also thinking about what are the platforms actually that we can bring a wholesale CBDC in a token form for euro to. What would be such platforms? There is a huge question mark on this. But now if you look then at the other side, or if you dig deeper also in the paper, they're also talking about utility, such platforms. It only makes sense to go there from their perspective. So I'm citing now from the paper, only if they're operated as utility, right? And now if you look at regulated layer one, this is exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to create a place where people see this place as utility in the same way like they are seeing public permission as Ethereum. But then on the other side, also create a place which is also easy to onboard. We are not ignoring the existing reality of regulated entities, which is easy to onboard for these regulated entities. And for this reason, we're introducing like feature 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, in addition to that, what you know from public permissionless Ethereum. And this is just one example. And then, of course, Stefan, if you look like at these large companies that on their own can move large volumes and have a large franchise, so to say, and can from day one kind of create large volumes. And JP Morgan is, for instance, also such a platform. And if you look at Kinexys, they also kind of a little bit changed their mind. They said, okay, we're bringing our asset there where it is needed. And since we are not having like people issuing securities on Kinexys, then let's bring the going back to coin idea again, right? And let's bring JP Morgan coin to these platforms. And here you see that these giants can, of course, move value, but they cannot come to this place which blockchain promises, like we see already in public permissionless setting for other types of assets, not necessarily MiFID, but other types of assets, where these assets freely can meet and where also competitors can exist next to each other and where the customship can kind of combine these services or move between these. And that's exactly the place that we try to create with a target audience, European financial industry first.
Ivica, since you mentioned the Eurosystem context, I think it's a good point in time to double click on Pontus and Apia and why this matters for for regulated layer one. So you or RA1 claims to be Eurosystem compatible, that is interoperable with Pontus and Apia, right? At least that's what I took from the materials you shared before the go live, and thank you for that. If that is true, a regulated layer one becomes a market DLT platform that can really settle the cash lag in actual central bank money via Pontus. And I think that's the whole game, right? So tokenized asset on RL1 and central bank money settlement via Pontus Apia without the cash lag, you're just moving digital tokens with no final settlement anchor. So my question now to you is really, is this integration confirmed already, or is it aspirational?
Mm-hmm. So here I need to be very clear, because it has a lot of potential to kind of be misleading. Yeah. So the first thing of all is Pontus integration is not happening at the platform level. Yeah. So that's the first thing. And it is not in responsibility of regulated layer one. So Pontus integration is happening at service and asset level, so which is on top of it. And the solution that we are providing on regulated layer one, and now we're coming to Swiat GmbH offering, tokenization and settlement engine, will have this integration with Pontus. Yeah, so we are already working on it, and the queue is already like set up for trades by the end of this year and also continuing into the next year. And of course, we are not the only one providing the solution. So there are also, of course, other solution providers that are also working on it. Yeah, and Eurosystem is, of course, open in this regard. They're serving the whole market and not only specific entities. So that's the first thing. The second thing is Pontus is interoperability solution. So it is designed in a way that the asset is still in real-time gross settlement system of the central bank, so Target 2 namely, but it can be connected with arbitrary number of, let's say, market DLTs, so it is agnostic to specific blockchain technology. It works for RL1, but it also works for Ethereum mainnet. You could also do it there, or on Polygon, or on Canton. So it is really agnostic in that regard. And so from this perspective, I also would say, of course, from marketing perspective, it sounds good that we are ready for Pontus, right? But it's not something unique to regulate layer one. But if we look at Apia, And now this is my own projection. This is not officially something from Eurosystem. But my projection is we will come to a point where Eurosystem is going to create a set of standards, which they consider then as eligible for bringing their services and for them to going into this connection. And one of these standards, so I'm personally expecting, so again, personal view here, is we'll also be looking at DLT networks. And then the question will be which properties a DLT network needs to have in order for European Central Bank to bring wholesale CBDC in token form to that network, question mark. So that's one of question marks that Appia hopefully is going also to answer. And then with regulated layer one, we're basically presenting on silver plate a system that could serve that purpose and help also to kind of connect with other assets.
So that now, in my own words, nailing Ivica at the wall. So you say you design regulated layer one in a way that makes it very attractive for ECB to launch the future wholesale CBDC on regulated layer one, bringing a very interesting cash leg together with tokenized securities that you also target for your clients. So actually, that's the dream everybody was talking about since 2016-17, that you bring together securities and cash to have this atomic DVP we all talk about for so many, many years. So that's one of the design principles I can read, at least from what you said in the last minutes. Is that true?
Absolutely. So, I mean, in more general terms, bringing different assets, including wholesale CBDC, to a place where they can meet. Yeah, and I mean, that it brings benefits, you just need to look at public permission setting for other types of assets, right? And then you see that it works, right? And we're also not just talking about wholesale CBDC. Of course, it is in strong focus for us because of capital market and treasury use cases, but there are different configurations for payment legs, let's say it. In stable coins and tokenized deposits, of course, belong to it. And if you look at the composition of Kivalis and composition of regulated layer one, then you will see a lot of overlap of its members. Then I will not further comment on this, but yeah, there is an overlap, which is good potential. Let's say it like this. Yeah, from my perspective, blockchain for financial industry can only work if we learn to create such places like public permissionless setting already learned a decade at least ago, so to say. And regulated layer one is doing everything, let's say, human possible to create this place no matter how long it takes. Yeah. And we took innovation risks by kind of showing already that it works. We lowered the verge further and now it is expanding to Europe. And of course, we would be happy if Eurosystem one day realizes that it also needs to bring the wholesale CBDC there where it's needed. Just like JP Morgan realized, it needs to bring its commercial bank money to the place where it's needed. Yeah, and but this is a long journey. Yeah.
Interesting. So to summarize that for our listeners, you apply for being the platform for different kinds of digital money like wholesale CBDC, like stable coins, like maybe tokenized deposits, but also for tokenized securities, and making these atomic swaps that everybody's talking about possible on such a new platform, which is very interesting. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, brilliant. So in this what section, we definitely understood this, that this is a platform play, a pure platform play offering neutrality. That is, RL1 promises to stay in lane and not compete on the asset service or access layer, which might be even commercially more attractive. So this is a platform play, and a challenging feature of platform plays are platform economics. That is, in German, it would be you need a lange Atem, so you need a long breath in terms of business case. So to me, I would definitely observe how deep the pockets of the founding members and the investors are in playing that platform play. Because Ivica, you just said whatever it takes, a long breath. And I hope that you really have that, because platform economics are brutal, right? You need the network effects. You need first mover advantages. We talked about the Eurosystem context with Pontus and Appia. We talked about other permission networks. There is the regulated liability network RLN in UK. There is the Canto network. There are the public chains going institutional like JP Morgan's Kinexys. So I would argue there is no first move advantage anymore. So in this environment, surviving these platform economics, that will be a super interesting dynamic to observe. And I wish you all the best surviving it. Yeah.
Thank you. And first mover advantage we still have, to be honest, because nobody tried to create this at that level in Europe so far. So from this perspective, so when we talk, I mean, meanwhile, we had talked to every European bank, yeah, and let's say the feedback is very positive. So we never run into someone who said this doesn't make sense, so I'm out. So we rather run into people that say, this is great, this is what I'm looking for, I'm joining, and then this is also the reason that the project was able to be financed and that it will be kind of incorporated with, let's say, at least 10 starting members, with also queue for additional members. Or we run into people that say, let's still wait a little bit, I'm not in hurry. But this is the typical, let's say, adoption curve that we have. Yeah.
Hmm. Right, so I want to avoid closing the episode without also touching on the how, so how you actually implement this platform play. An important, or probably the most important part of the how, particularly in the blockchain space, in which you actually want to exclude governance and trust, so you want to avoid governance. Let's double click on the governance and the neutrality questions in rolling out this platform and going live. Yeah, so I think neutrality is RL1's central claim. So if technology now isn't the bottleneck, you'd argue, I think understood, governance is. And regulated layer one is set up as an SCE, a Société Coopérative Européenne, right? So a European cooperative in Luxembourg, with the idea being equal votes, no single institution in control, competitors cooperating without handing the keys to anyone. Explain how that actually works in practice, because neutral governance among competitors is easy to say and famously hard to do. So how will this actually work in practice?
So the nice thing is we do not have to reinvent the wheel, either on governance side nor on technological side. So if you take the technological side, which is easy, Ethereum, best example. There are a lot of different technological constellations. Like, it's not only Ethereum out there, but none of them is by many orders of magnitude better than the other. So let's pick one that has some sort of, let's say, reputation and track record, and just use this technology. And we do not need to reinvent nothing, actually, nor for the network, nor for interoperability, nor for the privacy. Just kind of reusing this out of the innovation pool that we have already there. So that's the technological side. And if you look at the governance side, we also do not need to reinvent the wheel, yeah, because the cooperative structure is very well suited to manage shared utilities. And it worked already a couple of times in the past. Yeah? So if you, for instance, look at SWIFT, the challenge in the 70s was like, how do you do inter-bank message exchange? And today the challenge is, how do you do a shared transactional platform for banks? And actually, to be honest, I was waiting all the time for SWIFT to jump in and say, look, we solved this once for messaging, for the banking. Now let's solve this for, let's say, for transactional platforms. Well, since they didn't do it, we had to do it, right? And we are taking, I'm very honest there, so we're taking a lot of inspiration from there. And of course, since we are starting fresh, we can do it in a lightweight mode, so to say, the governance. But what I want to repeat one more time, we do not need to reinvent the wheel. And also when you look at DTCC, it's, I hope I'm not saying something wrong, but it's also a cooperative action. You asked, how do you bring now these competitors together? And the main ingredient there is to draw clearly this line between platform and services and assets on top of it. Do not let them discuss, so to say, at application and service level, because then it's getting into battle. But if you educate them, or if they're educated already in a way that everyone benefits of a shared platform and still everyone can compete on top of it, then it is operated for the benefit of all. Yeah. So that's the idea.
So maybe we can look at the concrete mechanics of neutrality here, right? So there's a general assembly, there's a supervisory board, there's a management board, and then a Sviat GmbH as technical operator on behalf of the cooperative. In fact, Sviat operates the tech and is a validator and has its corporate roots on the DEKA side, right? So can you be precise about where operational control actually ends and where cooperative control begins? So are you, going live until the end of July, is this line precisely drawn?
Exactly. So first of all, you cannot create something of this, let's say, size or intent in one day. And if you look also back at Swift, it was decades like of evolving of these things. And what we said is, let's create a nucleus. And we're not starting with a white paper, but we're starting with something that is working already. And let's carve this out of Sviat GmbH, which is, of course, not a credibly neutral governance body for such a network. Let's carve this out and bring this working part under this new umbrella. And let's make this umbrella, let's make the statutes, and let's say what is important and to start with, but let's not try to kind of solve every single, let's say, let's not create a template for every single decision. Let's guide us by the principles. And the principles are neutrality, openness, non-discriminatory, European governance, and operate this utility. And let's then evolve this from that, what Sviat has created, to something which might be in 10 or 20 years, something comparable to Swift, like we have right now, after decades of evolution. Yeah? And you also brought into game Sviat, but Sviat is in this sense provider. So it is simply a provider that if it fails on its SLAs, it also can be replaced. So it is not a member of this cooperative, it has no votes. It can use the network, so you do not need to be a member to use the network. So this is possible also not without the membership, but it is a simple provider, like hands. Yeah. So it is not deciding on what's the direction. It can, of course, propose things if it has good ideas, yeah, but it is not the supervisory body. It is not the managing director, and it is not the general assembly.
All right. So we've been in the nitty gritty details of why, what, and how of regulated layer one. I want to zoom out a bit, right, on the big picture. So Ivica, bring us home on the very vision again. You've said Europe doesn't need another blockchain. It needs to organize around shared neutral infrastructure where assets, services, and different forms of money can meet, in your words, while institutions keep competing on top of the platform. So Ivica, if we're sitting here in 3 years from now for episode, I don't know, 600 and something, what does RL1 worked, quote unquote, actually look like? And what's the one thing that has to go right for us to get there?
So if you're saying 5 years, then I would say we have something like 100 participants across Europe. So most probably out of each European country, at least. And we also have a lot of, this crystallization point where we can see also that payment and security legs are meeting with each other. And we see also that these, let's say, established players in the financial industry are also providing to its franchise a gateway to this network.
I like crystallization point, I have to admit. I need to align with Stefan if it makes it into the title. Would cool to see it in the title. So whether or not RL1 ultimately becomes the crystallization point, this episode is really about the harder, less glamorous question underneath all this tokenization hype. So can an industry full of competitors actually organize around shared neutral infrastructure, Ivica. I think that's the organizational problem you opened with, and it's the one worth watching in the future. And I know your answer. Your answer is yes. An industry full of competitors actually can organize around a shared neutral infrastructure.
Yes.
What
the answer is yes.
What I find very, very compelling here is that you can be very skeptical about what you try to do, Ivica, because the Americans, they go ahead again and they tokenize also equities on public chains, or at least semi-public chains. And let's see what happens with DTCC and Robinhood and all these other players innovating on top of that. And I think, again, they try to let the market decide and put maybe compliance a bit aside for now in this geopolitical environment. It's about winning first. But this time, Europe just doesn't have one answer, which is regulation, but at least you're building, Ivica. So despite me being skeptical about how that can become successful and creating these network effects that you obviously need, I'm at the same time a bit excited that from the building side, we are quite far ahead, and also the organizationally getting at least some of the European players together and starting to do that. And let's see if your traction is similar to Qivalis, where also I think 10 or 12 players founded Qivalis and then 20 more came out of the bush and said, okay, we want to join. So hopefully this is the same for RR1. You might know more than us, but it will be very, very interesting to see how this plays out, how soon different cash legs are available, how for example, Qivalis or other stable coins are available until you, for the time waiting for Apia or very compelling wholesale CBDC solutions. So it will be very, very interesting to see the success and the traction in the market for that whole thing. But it's a very different approach than we see anywhere else in the world. So it's a life experiment, I would say, that the three of us are watching. Or how do you see that?
Well, thank you. Thank you for honest and nice words. Yeah. I mean, you're taking US as, let's say, pushing through and doing everything on public. But if you take a closer look to them, or if you talk to them, they are very, very much compliance aware. And I would say even more than European players. If you look at the regulation, they removed the sign. I think it was said by someone else. I'm now citing. Yeah, so they removed the signs. No swimming, but they are not giving instructions how to swim. And of course, people are trying to find out. And where they're meeting is actually on Canton. And if I would say, what is the direct competition to regulate at layer one, then I would say Canton. Yeah. So our unique selling point is European governance, utility, and attached to technology that is more open. And so the whole U.S. industry and also a few European players, they're gathering around Canton. And now, so what's the answer on the European side, regulated layer one?
Lovely closing words. Thank you, Stefan, so much for guest hosting this episode and for keeping us honest. And a genuine thank you to Ivica for coming on, going live week fresh with us. So the inaugural week of RL1 is right ahead until the end of July. And thank you, Ivica, for also taking the harder questions head on rather than dodging them only. And also thank you to the listeners for listening to Bitcoin, Fiat and Rock and Roll so consistently and for making it until the end of this very episode. If you got something out of this, the single most helpful thing you can do is recommend the show to one colleague and leave us a rating wherever you listen. Do come find us and keep the conversation going. We're on YouTube and LinkedIn, and our expert community lives on Telegram in both German and English. Ivica, I think you're a member, Stefan too, so do continue the conversation right there. In particular, after the go live, drop all your questions there, and we hope to answer as best as possible. Yeah, and ultimately subscribe to BFRR wherever you get your podcasts. So see you there next week for another critical development in the evolution of digital finance. Until then, this is Bitcoin, Fiat and Rock and Roll, bringing Europe's perspective on digital currencies to the world. Thanks for listening. Bye, Stefan. Bye, Ivica.
Bye. Thank you very much for the invitation. Enjoyed very much.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.